Now it's time for Homegrown on 94.7 WPBC LP Charlottesville with your hosts Clinton Johnston and Leslie M. Scott Jones, Charlottesville's only radio show devoted to local arts. And now, here's Leslie.
Whoops, there you go. Good. Let's slap all the buttons as fast as we can.
Hit the button, Quentin. Hit the button.
You were hitting the button. Can we just start the day with a do-over already?
I
was distracted by your luminescent lipstick. That's
were
what
you?
It was. It's just coming at me.
It's brand new. I got it for the show because my dress is like this peachy kind of pink color.
Not for this show.
No, not for this show.
This is the show that you're in.
You know that you have been doing this show for just about a year with me. When's the last time I wore lipstick?
Good morning, Sunday morning. Whether you're an art maker, an art breaker, an art faker, or an art partaker, welcome all, because of course all are welcome to Homegrown, your show about local art, brought to you by the Blue Moon Diner. I'm the one they call Clinton, and I'm here one with the gracious and the bodacious Leslie M. Scott Jones.
Oh, good morning, Clinton. How are you?
I am well, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. I actually slept well last night.
You slept well last night?
I know. It was a fluke. A freak of nature happened last night. And I actually rested.
Was it due to the change in temperature and barometric pressure?
No, I think it was due to the lovely, warm-natured person laying next to me.
You just have the life. You just have the life. Okay, well, you know what?
What?
My cat was near me last night.
Well, you're lucky. You are lucky because my cat doesn't get near me ever.
I don't understand that about your cat.
I don't either. I mean, you know, she looks absolutely adorable, but as soon as you go to make a move toward her, she's like, "What you doing? Why are you coming over here? No.
What did you do to her?
I didn't do anything to her except take her in from the cold.
Do we need to call Cat Social Services?
No, I brought her into my home 11 years ago this December. And
she snuggled with you twice.
Yeah, pretty much. It literally took her about 5 years to like sit next to me on the couch. Like I would be on one end and she would be on the other, and I would go to make a move towards her and she'd be like, Hey, I didn't know. You can stay over there, it's really okay.
Can I say I brought my cat home? 5 minutes.
5 minutes?
5 minutes.
I don't know. It's just she's an odd little duck is what she is.
There you go.
But I love her.
You know what I love?
What do you love?
I love giving out our parental advisory.
Oh, okay. Well, let's do that.
We're going to start the show the way we frequently start the show, by giving out a parental advisory for all you parentals out there who might be looking for advice. So easy to get, so hard to take. We might, at some point in this show, say the word crozier. Crozier. Not closure.
Not closure.
Not closure.
Okay.
But crozier.
Okay.
You could get closure from someone who is holding a crozier.
Yes, you could.
But you might not like that closure.
You just like doing these words just to make people look up what in the heck it is you're talking about, don't you?
I don't like these words. These are evil words.
They're evil words. I don't think there are any words that are evil.
Oh, there's so many words that are evil.
Oh, my God.
So many words that I think that puritanical scientists have done a study and shown that there are only 637 pure words in the English language. Everything else tainted with sin.
Oh, wow. Well, then
tainted with sin, 3 of the 637 pure words.
Yeah, okay. Well, I guess that I'm just sinful then, because I know I'll use a whole lot more than 637.
I'm going to talk about the sin of your words. I'm not going to talk about the sin of your words.
Clinton.
We should talk about our first guest.
Okay. All right. We can do that. I would much rather do that. I have a lot of sin. It would take more than an hour. Our first guest, we are so happy to have.
So happy.
Elva Mason, who is a local arts and entertainment attorney and media talent manager. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm well.
So much banter and cheer this early Sunday morning.
Uh-oh. Is it not working?
Say something, Elva.
Can you hear me?
There we go.
There we go.
There we go. It's that third mic thing. That's what that is. It's that third mic thing. It always throws us. Okay. So, Elva, you are here to talk about the recent ruling by the DOJ concerning music rights.
Yes.
And how those are governed.
For those who are keeping score, DOJ, Department of Justice.
Yes. What the Department of Justice has to do with music, I don't know. But anyway, okay. That's another topic for another show. So what has been the way music rights before this ruling? How was it governed before then?
Okay. So by way of a little bit of background for folks that are not as aware, when you write music, write songs, the U.S. copyright laws gives you certain interest in that music. Derivative rights, performance rights, the ability to license others to perform your music.
Mm-hmm.
And so songwriters, composers, authors, publishers really don't have the time to administer, well, they can, but it can be quite time-consuming to administer the licenses for broadcasting of this music. And this is only related to broadcast.
Okay.
So PROs, which are performing rights organizations, came into play, BMI, ASCAP, CSAC being the largest. And what they do is they issue licenses to radio stations, television stations, restaurants, bars, all of these lovely places where you hear music, background music, performance
right.
music, that allows them to play the music.
And the artists then get paid for it.
And then the artists get the royalties, and they are administered by the performance rights organizations. As you know, songwriters often collaborate. Very rarely these days do you have one person who writes the lyrics, music, everything.
Right.
Usually it's a collaboration. And sometimes you can have four or five people involved in the writing and ownership of a song.
Right.
And so they're fractional shares of interest. Prior to this ruling, and there are two main, ASCAP and BMI, the main PROs.
Right.
It's purely voluntary. You can choose which one you want to belong to. Some people prefer ASCAP, some prefer BMI. But the way it has worked in the past is, let's say you and I write a song together.
Okay.
And we own it 50-50. And you're a member affiliate of ASCAP and I'm BMI. Let's say some television station wants to play our song, and so they'll go to, I belong to BMI, you belong to ASCAP. They'll go to BMI and say, I want to license that song mm-hmm. for my television show. BMI will then issue the license, and what they used to do is issue fractional interest. Because
right.
I own 50%, you own 50%, and we're in different performing rights organizations. So with the new DOJ ruling, they have ruled that these PROs have to issue 100% of any work, which creates a lot, potentially is going to create a lot of issues in how you administer those royalties. So, for instance, you can go and issue 100% of the song, even though I own 50%
of it. Right.
Your PRO, ASCAP, will be involved in issuing, negotiating, and issuing a license, collecting the royalties, and
right.
then it's up to them to pay me. Now, my concern is, are you going to treat me the way you treat Leslie?
Right.
Are people going to start shopping which PRO they belong to?
Yes.
Are people going to no longer want to collaborate because if you are with a different PRO, you're afraid of how you're going to get paid? Am I going to get paid later?
Right.
There's this real fear of the sort of ripple effect of allowing one PRO to issue 100%. Now, the DOJ, in reviewing the consent decrees,
mm-hmm.
said, well, that was the intent, really, of the U.S. copyright laws in the beginning, is to allow any owner, part owner, to issue 100% of the license. And if you look at the law, the way it's written, it really does allow that. And then that person or persons will be responsible
for paying the other person.
The other person is paid. The problem is that these consent decrees, they were issued initially in 1941, are very antiquated in terms of today's technology.
Right.
And they haven't kept pace. And so when ASCAP, BMI went to the DOJ to say there needs to be reform.
Right.
In the licensing, the way it's done, the rate courts, the way they're handled, it just hasn't kept pace with today's technology. Well, the DOJ went a step further. They looked at it all and said, yeah, it does need reform, but they went above and beyond what they were requested to do,
right,
and issued this current ruling, which is really put a lot of people in, you know, sort of this flux state.
Well, and the New York Times said that they basically, they denied what they BMI did. And ASCAP asked them to do.
They did.
But said, okay, we're not going to do that because that was stupid, but we're going to do this.
Exactly.
Which makes your life 30 million times harder.
Exactly. And there's a lot of controversy because the tech folks, the Googles and the Apples and iTunes, the streaming folks love it.
Right, because they don't have to go in between PROs to figure out who gets paid what.
Yeah, and you know, it sort of lessens their concern at these lower rates that they're charging royalties.
Right.
They'll be able to do that.
Right.
The PROs, publishers, authors, composers can't stand it. Well, and the other controversial part of all of this is the assistant attorney general who made the ruling used to be an attorney for one of the largest law firms that represented Google. So there's all this backlash on whether she really, in my opinion, as an attorney, she probably should have recused herself.
From that.
So now the
talk about conflict of interest.
Well, yeah, and some will say yes, and some will say no. But there's many, many layers to this beyond the 100% as opposed to fractional administration of these licenses. You've got the rate courts, which if you go to a PRO and you want to negotiate a fee for licensing music, and you can't come to an agreement, then now it goes to a rate court, which is a federal court that decides. And that can take forever, but it's longer than just going straight to a federal court that's not a rate court.
Right.
So one of the other issues that ASCAP and BMI wanted was some reform of the rate. Really, they want arbitration, binding arbitration, as opposed to going to rate court.
Right.
So you got that layer. They're just... I think the one thing that everybody agrees is there needs to be reform in the way music is licensed. These parties all need to come to the table. There's some issues that the Google tech folks are correct on.
Mm-hmm.
There's some issues that your PROs and your publishers and your authors and your composers are correct on. Mm-hmm. It's just bringing them to the center,
right,
which might be hard because they have competing interests.
Yeah.
But what people need to keep in mind is the whole purpose of copyright legislation was to encourage people to be creative.
Yes.
And to write music in this case that we could all enjoy. And if we're fighting about, if we're trying to keep our little piece of the pie and we're fighting about what I can do if I'm a PRO or what you can do if you're a streamer.
Yeah.
Then ultimately, we all are
hurting. We all lose, yeah, because the music doesn't get out.
The music doesn't get out there. People are afraid. People who want to license music are afraid, well, you know, if I do this, am I going to be infringing? Can I rely on this? It's constantly in flux. If I can do this now, but they can go back and change it.
Well, is that also going to make people just start using music without going through the proper channels?
Which people have been doing anyway.
Well, yes, but...
I don't encourage that.
Right, but, I mean, you know, if they make the process more difficult, then that's just going to encourage people who may, you know, said, oh, well, it's a pain in the butt, but, you know, I really should do it the right way. Now, they've made it even more difficult. You know, people may be more inclined to say, you know what? I'm just going to do it.
I'm just going to do it, take my chance, or I'm not going to do it. Or you have... it's so complicated that, you know, you get the lawyers involved and you're always second guessing. And if it's constantly in flux, the other part of this is what happens to all of those private agreements that were negotiated? For instance, you have a television show, you have a theme song.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my clients. And there are four or five different writers
who
all own a percentage. But they decide, you know, we're going to appoint one person to be the administrator for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And they've entered into a private agreement, which is totally legal
to
do, which needs to be honored and will be honored by the PRO for that one person to administer. What happens to all of those agreements that are in place?
Mm-hmm.
What happens to agreements that we have with foreign country PROs that are collecting and admin. I mean, there's this huge ripple effect.
Yeah.
From this.
So, was there any thought that did the DOJ say anything about those ripple effects? Did they even mention that they even thought about them?
Well, you can't. They can't deny that it wasn't brought to their attention. You've got ASCAP, BMI, CSAC. You've got songwriters, composers. You've got people testifying before Congress. You've got the U.S. Copyright Office issued a legal opinion.
Okay,
so for
they
them
knew.
To say they weren't aware of the possible ripple effects would just be not
wrong.
Wrong. It was wrong.
It would be wrong. Okay.
For 2 years. This issue came up in 2014.
So they've been looking at it for two years.
For 2 years. Lawyers. And, you know, lawyers look at things
10 ways to Sunday.
Ad nauseum.
Yes.
So, you know, it's going to open. It has opened a can of worms that was already open, I think, that needs to be reviewed, has been. But I think the parties really need to come to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's got to give up a little something and recognize what is really important here. Is it important that I keep my little monopoly?
Right.
Or is it important that we remember the whole reason that these laws were created? To encourage people to create.
Yes.
To collaborate.
To create and
to get give, it out there.
Well, and to give artists a way to make,
money
with their art.
Exactly. And that's the other piece that's being heard. A lot of these affiliates depend on these royalties.
Right.
And if you're cutting into what they can make, it really becomes a disincentive. They've
right.
got to go out and find some other work.
Exactly.
Where they can get paid.
Right.
16 minutes past the hour, you're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And if you're just tuning in with us, this is Homegrown, a show about local art. And we are here with local arts and entertainment attorney Elva Mason talking about the recent decision by the DOJ about shared rights among songwriters and split PROs.
So, okay, hold on. Clinton's got something else he wants to do.
It's not that I want to do, it's that they're telling me to do.
So, Elva, what is the main thing that we as artists can do to tell the DOJ that the ruling that they made is unacceptable, and they need to look at it again? Obviously, 2 years was not enough.
Well, there are two things going on. BMI has given a letter of intent to the federal court that they intend to fight this ruling.
Okay.
And then ASCAP is going to go the legislative route to try to implement some legislative reform. So you can write to your legislators to express your concerns. You can lobby, pull. There's strength in numbers.
Yes.
So there are a lot of artists that don't really understand. One, many don't know what's happened.
Right.
Two, don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
So inform people, pull them together, and get people to become very active in speaking out to their legislators and voicing shows like this that bring about what's going on
right.
are very important.
And I want to thank Clinton for bringing this to my attention because I didn't know it had happened until he wrote. I got a very urgent email. Did you hear this? No, I didn't hear. Okay, I'm listening. What?
Good for you. Good for you. So just being informed and getting the word out there and mobilizing. And the big thing that I want to express, particularly since I represent artists, is as devastating as this may be to some, don't let this make you go to a place of, I'm not going to perform and create music.
Right, right.
It can be frustrating, but we need you to create music, to continue creating music. Know that you have people that are on your side that will be fighting for you, fighting for us, really.
Mm-hmm.
And just keep become very active and stay very active in this. What's going to be a long, no doubt, process.
Right.
With a lot of uncertainty in between, in the
interim. Right.
Yeah.
Well, we definitely, Clinton and I went through a long list of people to find you to talk about this, someone who actually knew what was going on in the ins and outs of it. And and in that process, we talked to a lot of musical artists in town.
Mm-hmm.
And the good news is that all of them knew about it.
Good.
And all of them were very upset.
Rightfully so.
So I think especially this town, we have a large contingent of artists who are well informed and who will get involved and help help change the ruling.
Good. Many indie artists in here. It affects all artists across the world, particularly independent artists who, you know, are struggling because of some of the technology has been good to them and some hasn't.
So yeah.
I think just continue to be informed, and certainly if any, it's a very complex situation, and I haven't even skimmed the surface of it.
Right.
There are many, many layers, but if anyone has questions, feel free to give my information, and I would be happy to explain.
Oh, you can do that right now.
Oh.
How can they get in touch with you?
Well, locally, they can call me.
Mm-hmm.
My number is 434-984-6664.
Okay.
You can find me on the Internet. If you just Google Elva Mason, you'll find me. I'm on Facebook, and I'm happy to explain some of the questions and many questions that folks have.
Right.
Not just artists, but people who administer.
Yes.
Or thinking about administering royalty, licensing agreements, people that are, even some attorneys. We as attorneys are trying to grapple and get our arms around this.
Right.
How does it affect the licensing agreements that you enter into?
Right.
And then the other part of this is for the artists that don't belong to PROs.
Right.
That are issuing licenses out there.
You know,
how does this affect them? Because not everybody, it's voluntary.
Right. So not everybody has to go through one of those companies to do it.
Yeah.
And so did the DOJ ruling say anything about those people?
Well, they really haven't directly addressed them.
Of course not.
But they're focused on, you know, what was in front of them, the PROs.
Right.
But there's an effect to folks that are administering their own licenses.
Right, because I'm sure they collaborate with people, too, and that means more work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
they don't have a big company to do that work for them.
And more uncertainty, even in terms of using attorneys or people to administer, going to those folks, it's just this ripple of many, many, many layers.
Right.
That would take, I could spend a couple of hours. I could spend, you know, just an hour on the rate court.
Right.
Another hour on, you know, the taking out the digital part of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very complex. But people shouldn't let that, it can be daunting. But I say educate yourself. There's
right.
a lot of information also on the Internet. If you go to BMI or ASCAP's website, you'll see their take on it.
They've okay. got
many positions. Documents mm-hmm. on there. If you want the other side of it, if you're a streamer, just do Google. I mean, there's a plethora of information on this ruling
mm-hmm.
and the effects. And you're going to see, you know, two different sides to the story and then make up your own mind.
Right.
And there's the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And the middle piece is what we ought to be focusing on.
Right.
You know, so people get too kind of entrenched in their side and myopic and not looking at what are we all trying to accomplish here.
Right.
And we got to give a little to get
right.
a lot.
Yeah.
But if we don't give a little, we're not going to get anything.
Right. And what we all want is we want people to be able to create music,
mm-hmm.
to make a living at creating music.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to do that, they need to be able to be paid when their music is used
Absolutely.
In other places.
Absolutely.
That's just it.
And I think the big potentially good of all of this is looking at the fact that we need reform in this
yeah.
area
yes.
badly. When you're relying on consent decrees from 1941 that have been amended when there wasn't the technology that we have today, that's just ludicrous.
Right.
You would think these people had figured that out before now.
Right.
But sometimes the legal part limps along.
Yes.
Know?
Yes.
And then the process is so long.
Right. Because it took them two years to come to this wrong decision.
Just to come to this. And this is just a small piece of it.
Right. They didn't even look at everything.
Yeah.
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 Elva, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
For coming and talking to us.
Yeah.
And we'd love to have you back because,
okay.
you know, Clinton and I, we are primarily theater artists.
Okay.
But we both have musical talents.
Sure, sure, sure.
And, you know, we'd love to have you back to talk about, because we're not business people. We don't like we talk about it all the time
yeah.
on the show. Like,
yeah.
we're artists. We have no idea the business side of
yeah.
anything. So
you're not by yourself. In fact, you're probably the creative mind doesn't think business like, and nor do they want to oftentimes.
Right, exactly.
That's why the rest of us are
exactly.
trying to help.
Thank you so much. It was
pleasure.
An absolute pleasure to have you.
My pleasure. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you. All right, Clinton, what are we doing now? What are we doing? I've done a lot of talking this morning. Where have you been? What were you doing?
I was I was listening to the most fascinating conversation.
Were you?
I was. It was all about the DOJ ruling and split PROs. You should have been there because it was just great.
So,
if only there were a radio station.
If only.
That would allow such things to go on over the air.
Such things like that, yes.
A radio station like 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
Oh, that one!
That one to which you're listening right now at 26 minutes past the hour. And it's Homegrown, your show about local art. Let's talk about some of the local art that's going on in our local town. Currently running now until September 29th, American Shakespeare Center Summer Fall Season. That's 12th Night King Lear, Henry VI Part 2 by Mr. Shakespeare and the modern musical Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson. Currently running until September 8th, Black Body, a digital video sculpture by Chris McDaniel at Ruffin Hall at UVA. September 6th is the open mic night at Charlottesville at the Anteroom. September 8th to 11th, five women wearing the same dress at Shannon Arts. You want to know more about that? Listen to our show from last week at SeavillePodcast.com. We talked to the director, Jackie Pattison, all about it. September 8th, one mic stand, spoken word, open mic at PVCC at the V. Earl Dickinson Building. September 9th to September 10th, Stanton's International Film Festival, a community-based film festival focusing on emerging filmmakers with a high emphasis on experimental, avant-garde, and underground cinema. For more information, go to filmfreeway.com. That's one word, filmfreeway.com. That sounds really interesting. Except you talk about really interesting. Oh, I missed this last time. I hope I can see it this time. September 10th to 11th, Yard Dreams. Another Yard Dreams is coming up.
Oh, yes, we need to go.
We so do. A weekend of artists playing in the neighborhood. That's local artists showing their artwork through the yards of Belmont. Organized to PVCC. For a list of locations, go to www.yarddreamspvcc.com. September 11th to September 12th, audition. Leslie, what? My dear, wonderful Leslie.
Yes, baby.
My fabulous and fantabulous Leslie.
Yes, baby.
I never thought that I would say this out loud.
Okay, but here we go.
Are you ready for it?
I'm ready.
September 11th to September 12th, auditions for Guys and Dolls at Live Arts Theater. Oh, what became of the little alternative theater that we
had? I don't know.
Guys and Dolls, when you see a guy. September 12th, Bent Theater Improv 101 classes. Figure out how to say yes. And then let's talk about some of the musical options that are going on at our wonderful town. Today, the Charlottesville Baroque Ensemble Three Notched Road presents España, music of the Spanish Baroque at St. Paul's Episcopal Church. September 7th, Waterside Wednesdays with our man David Tewksbury at Glasshouse Winery.
Hey, David!
Hey, David! September 7th, Gina Sobel at Rapture. Pro Ray Nada Farm Brewery's Songwriter Showcase hosted by Michael Coleman. His guests on September 7th, get this, David Tewksbury, Jenna Matthews, and Brady Scott.
Oh my God, that's going to be an awesome show.
September 8th to September 22nd, the Charlottesville Chamber Music Festival. September 8th, also Juliana Doherty at the Garage. On September 9th, get ready for it, it's Chamomile and Whiskey with Larkspur at Fridays After 5 at the Sprint Pavilion. The Sally Rose Band with Sarah White and Illiterate Light at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall. What? And Where Are They Now? A Dirty Dishes and Claire Quilty class reunion at the Anteroom and Mother Shillelagh at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub.
And I think we need to applaud Clinton for saying all of those words correctly and at such a wonderful speed.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll take all the applause that I can get. September 10th, the Jelly Street Jazz at Albemarle Cider Works. LG and Friends at the Whiskey Jar. Camille and Whiskey again doing Starry Nights at Veritas Vineyards and Winery. And Anlar at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. And of course, it's every Sunday. It's Travis Elliott at Rapture. Every Monday, it's the Singer-Songwriter Night at the local. Tuesdays, it's the traditional Irish Session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Wednesday, it's an open mic night at Pro Reynada Farm Brewery. Bob Bonetta at Cafe Katura. And the Mike Resent Brzezinski and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. Every Thursday, it's the Woolen Writers Revival hosted by Will Thomas Reed and Brian Craddock at Firefly. And every Thursday, the John Dearth Quintet at Miller's, because every once in a while, you just got to come down to Dearth. And those are just some of the music. musical things and artists, other artistic things that we have going on in our musical artistic town of ours. If you are an artist and have an event and want people and want us to talk to people about it, we want to do it. Contact us at our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/homegrownwpvc, or you can contact us at our handy dandy email address, homegrown947@gmail.com. 31 minutes past the hour, you're listening to 947 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and this is Homegrown, a show about local art. Make sure you stay tuned afterwards for the Sunday morning wake up call with your host, Sean McCord. He's talking to Anna Leon from Guerrilla Theater. It's an art doubleheader today. But right now, we're going to come back to Homegrown, brought to you by Blue Moon Diner. Blue Moon Diner, breakfast all day, every day with brunch on Saturdays and Sundays, and in the afternoons and evenings, carefully constructed diner fare. And speaking of evenings, on weeknights, Blue Moon Diner favors us by supporting local and visiting artists. This week, Tuesday, storytelling singer Victoria Delancey. Wednesday, Jim Wave. Thursday, the genre-bending band Rivers from Harrisburg, PA. They sound fascinating. And Friday, talk about fascinating, local retro surf guitar, Mexican garage punk fiends, Lucadora Acústica. It's at BlueMoonDiner.net and 512 West Main Street, Charlottesville. .32 from me to you, pass that hour, passing the mic to our next guest, the guy you'll like. Hey, it's the executive director from Second Street Gallery, back with us, Warren Craghead.
Hello, what up, what up?
How are you, my man?
I'm good. It's good to be back to talk to you guys about our show and our new season that's starting.
Yes!
Has started already, actually.
That started already, and I am so sorry that I've missed it. I was going to come by and check it out. Thank you for bringing some pictures. I was going to come by and check it out yesterday, but the evil day job. My evil day job changed my hours and said no.
Well, you're going to get a second chance with this show. I'll talk about it in a minute because we have an event that's coming up this Friday where the artist is going to be there in a conversation. I'll talk more about that in a minute. But
tell.
Yeah, well, we're really excited to start our 43rd season. So
43rd?
Yeah, 43 years as a nonprofit contemporary art gallery. We are either the oldest or tied with the oldest in the country showing contemporary art from around the world for 43 years, almost as old as me. So it's a really great achievement to survive this long, and we're really excited. We bring work from around
that
the world.
That is impressive. Let's not zoom past that one.
Yeah.
Older than anything in New York, older than anything in L.A., older than any other art gallery, possibly the oldest art gallery continually showing.
Yeah, the oldest nonprofit contemporary art gallery. There's big museums older than us.
And right.
But it was started by artists. Surprisingly, it's always been on Second Street in Charlottesville, though it's been at a few locations. It was at McGuffey before moving over to this building that we share with Live Arts and Lighthouse. But it's always been a place where to bring great contemporary art from local to regional to international. Last season, we had artists from South Africa, from Egypt, from Richmond. This season, we have artists coming from Trinidad, from Cuba, from Long Island, New York, among various places. So we're really excited to be able to bring this stuff and to contribute our part to this culture of creativity here in Charlottesville, which you guys do a great job of highlighting every week.
Aww.
Thank you.
we're just glad the art's out there.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of it. I think we were really... We had our opening for the first show of the season. I'll talk about it in a minute. On Friday, we had a great opening. A lot of people came. And then we'll continue to have events throughout the season. So I'll say now and I'll say at the end, we're open Tuesday through Saturday, 11 to 6. So come by. Free admission. It's always free to come in and see everything and tell us what you think, good or bad. And
And people are welcome, even if you don't have $10,000 to $20,000 burning in your pocket to purchase a piece of art.
You're
still welcome to come in and say, hey,
yeah, exactly.
That looks freaky or that looks cool.
Yeah, I mean, the whole point...
Or that looks freaky cool.
Yeah, exactly. Our whole point is we're nonprofit, which means we aren't making decisions about what to show by what's gonna sell. We're we have a curator, Tasha Grantham, who works really hard to bring in work that is important, that kind of tells a story over the whole season, and that is important artists who she believes deserve the kind of platform that Second Street gives them here in Charlottesville. So, and we've had some great, great artists in the past coming up. It's really exciting.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So, you want to tell us about the...
So, our show, our season 43 opened with the work of Sonia Clark. Clark is a... she's a professor at VCU, but she's shown her work, I think her bio says, on 6 continents. She's shown around the world internationally. She's all over the place. She is the head of the crafts department at VCU, and I'm not the only one on the radio today who is a proud VCU alum.
Go Rams!
Yeah. So, but Clark's work is a lot about, at least this body of work that she has here, she investigates her own history, her own personal history, her family history, the history of our country, and then uses materials to transforms materials to kind of illuminate that and tell that story. She's an African American artist, and so her story has a wide sort of net. It brings in a lot of different cultures that bring, I think, tell the story of America in a way that one doesn't normally see it in that way. So I think maybe I can talk about some of the work. It'd probably be a better way. So I'll just talk for a while. So when you first walk in, there's a big piece that I think says a lot about her work or the work that we have in the gallery, which is a lot of it is brand new work. It's debuting here in Charlottesville, which is really great. It's on a big custom made table that, the stand of the table is in the form of this X, which suddenly brings up this idea of, the Confederate battle flag, which there's another piece based on that farther back. But on this table, there are two vessels. One is a larger vessel, a ceramic vessel, which has some material that she got from her first trip to Africa. The other is a smaller vessel, which has some dirt in it, and that dirt is from her family's homestead in Jamaica, both of which are sort of reflecting her family history. But both of those are sitting on a giant bolt of cloth, a big roll of cloth, which is her family tartan. The tartan, if people don't know, is the Scottish plaid that people wear in
kilts.
So
this is like a Scot, like an actual...
Right.
Oh.
It really is a tartan. So you're basically each clan in Scotland has their own tartan that they can wear. My family, a lot of them are from Scotland. I can wear the Duncan tartan if I feel like it. And this is her family's tartan. Now, when one meets an African-American person, one doesn't normally think that there is this varied history, and yet this is part of her history. Mm-hmm. And to me, it was very illuminating because it reinforced this idea that we are all connected, intertwined in these cultures. This tartan is as much hers as it is anyone else's, and yet she also has this history from Africa and from Jamaica as well.
That's interesting, because just the setup that you describe, the first thing I thought was how these pieces of her history were compartmentalized.
Right.
And separate, but what you're describing is this interesting tension between having these separate compartmentalized aspects of identity and yet part of a connected continuum.
Right, right. And in doing it, I also appreciate, and I'll talk about some other pieces, in a way that is inclusive. I feel like she's interested and sort of wanting to sort of investigate how these things can fit together to make, you know, her or us or all of us, you know. A lot of one thing that this whole show makes me think is that the history of, say, African-Americans in this country is I'm a straight white guy. It's my history, too. It's part of my... Right. It's all of our history together. You know, we wouldn't be where we are without all of us, both the good and the bad that's happened in the past. So another piece that's really interesting, in the back room, there's a scale model of a roller coaster from King's Dominion called the Rebel Yell. I think a lot of us growing up in Virginia rode the Rebel Yell a lot. I know I did. We talked about how you would ride it just about trying to fall out, but not totally falling out. And she has a scale model. It's really interesting to look at. But then attached to it are some headphones. And when you put them on, you hear recordings of Confederate soldiers doing the Rebel Yell, which was...
Really? Because I thought there were no recordings of them.
Well, as I understand it, someone went around recording in very primitive equipment, decades later, Confederate veterans doing it to try to get this down. So there's these screams. It was their battle cry that was supposedly very terrifying as they charge the Union lines. So I have many people come up to me at the opening and say, I rode that roller coaster for years, since I was a kid. I'm from this, you know, from the Civil War, from this Confederate. And so
how do you not put that together?
Exactly.
How?
And I think, but the way she presents it also, in again, this beautiful way, the way the materials used, which in this case, it's a small model, but so it's very interesting to look at aesthetically, but to say, not even accusatory, not pointing a finger, not condemning anyone. Like, this is here. This is still here. Right. This history is here. As Faulkner said, you know, history's not gone and we're still part of it. That's not the exact quote, but that these things are not even gone. They're still here and a part of us. Another piece she has in the back that we have in the back room in the gallery, she's known for, some pieces of hers that she does performances where people send her Confederate battle flags that were part of their family. A lot of times, you know, there was an explosion of them in the late 60s, as you can guess why, as people fought against civil rights.
Right.
And people will send them to her, and then she does a performance where she unravels them by hand, thread by thread.
Whoa.
Now, she just did a performance of that at the National Museum in Duke on Wednesday, this past Wednesday. We don't have one of those here. What we have is a flag that has been taken apart, bits of it by parts, so it's just these hanging threads. You can still see the flag, but then on the ground, on a pedestal, is the threads bundled up. I really feel, when I think about these performances, there's a sense of, again, confrontation, but in a quiet, calm, almost respectful way.
Yeah.
And then, you know, she spends more time unraveling this than the people who made it or even the people who probably flew this thing over their houses. Like, she's really spending time taking this apart, literally unpacking, you know, our history. So we have one of those.
But she is taking it apart, I imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, people attach a lot of emotion to flags, emotion and their identity to flags. I can't help but think, does she need security when she does these performances?
So far we've been fine, I think, because I think part of it, and this is just me talking, she's doing it with an air, it feels like, of respect, not so much for the ideals that a lot of us believe that flag means, but more for the idea of this history and that you can't just, you know, she's not burning this flag. She's not chopping it up and throwing it in the trash.
Right.
She's slowly unraveling it. And so taking that time with it, taking her time, you know, I believe shows a sense of respect, even if it's not necessarily for the ideals that a lot of us believe this comes from. This is coming from the descendant of a Confederate veteran. I'm like, I don't like that flag. A big part of this show, the show is called Bittersweet and Tender, and the title really.
And that's it's separate. It's bitter, sweet, and tender. Not bittersweet and tender.
Right. Oh, yeah. Bitter, comma, sweet, and comma, tender. And if you want to know more about it or see images of the work, secondstreetgallery.org is our website. You can also go to our Facebook feed or Twitter feed or Instagram feed. You can see some of the work there.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of this work. Sugar is a big part of this body of work. So sugar, the homestead in Jamaica was a sugarcane plantation. And sugar, of course, is part of the triangular trade that brought a lot of enslaved people to our country and started a lot of African-American families' history in the United States. And so,
I think the first instance of Africans, of captured Africans, coming to be enslaved agricultural labor was to pick sugar.
Cotton. It was sugar.
It was sugar.
Yeah. And so she has, she takes that. It's also, you know, for her as an artist, it's a material that I think really interesting. So she has these, a ring that is, instead of a diamond or a precious stone in the middle, it's cast sugar. And it's extremely fragile. She has it with three rings, and they're actually on the back of the card here. There's one that's sugar, one that's hair. I believe it's her hair, and one that's cotton. All of which kind of tell a little bit of a story of a certain part, a certain time in our history. She also has some $5 bills, which of course has Mr. Lincoln on them, that are encased in sugar. There are let's see, she had made money out of sugar cane fibers. And in fact, it's a stack of money that is the amount that she would have been worth on the auction block as an enslaved person, which was intense to hear. And again, all of these things are also very beautiful. They're very almost precious objects. And so the idea of sugar being bitter and sweet, of course it's sweet. My children, you know, they want sugar all the time. But it's also bitter when you think about the history, especially how much people suffered to have that start in our country. So, yeah.
This is David Tewksbury, singer-songwriter from Charlottesville, Virginia, and you are listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC.
46 minutes past the hour is Homegrown, your show about local art. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Warren Craghead, executive director of Second Street Gallery, about the gallery season coming up and specifically about the exhibit that is just opened by Sonia Clark, Bitter, Sweet, and Tender. I'm sorry.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So you said this is the premiere of all of this work?
Not all of it, but a lot of this work is brand new, right out of her studio. Yeah.
Okay, so how did you convince her to premiere all this stuff here?
Well, we have a very convincing, great curator. Her name's Tasha Grantham, and she...
Thank you, Tasha.
Thank you, Tasha. She works really hard to find artists. But, well, she has a long-standing relationship with a lot of these artists, like Sonia Clark, like some people that we showed last season or that we're showing in this upcoming season. And so she really helps us to, in a way, punch above our weight class and get some people in who show at museums, who show internationally, and yet will show here in little old Charlottesville.
So this is some really weighty stuff.
Yeah.
Especially for this town.
Yes, especially now.
Especially now in this town. I mean, you know, I grew up in Charlottesville, and there has always been the divide that no one wants to talk about. So the fact that, you know, you're bringing these pieces that really talk about it.
Yeah. For such a progressive town, we feel like we're very progressive. And I think we are compared to a lot of other places. I still think there's a lot of ways to go to bring... I mean, one thing that we see as Second Street Gallery, we want to bring all the audiences into our space. And I think a lot of nonprofits, a lot of arts places want to do that. We want to be there for everyone. And so artists like Sonia Clark, other artists that we brought over last year. I mean, I'm really proud that, say, last season, we had, 68% women artists. We had, I think, 32% people of color who showed in our gallery. Mm. And that is way, way above other contemporary art spaces around the country. And when I did those numbers, it was more like surprising, not because, well, it was surprising because it's not like this is our, we're trying to do this. We're bringing in good artists. There's good artists of all types. And so we really want to try to include everyone as an audience member. Now, Sonia Clark, you know, she's a great American artist and she's blown up all over the place. So it's a no-brainer. Like, of course we'll show Sonia Clark's work. And I should say she's the one thing that's great is this Friday at 6:30 at the gallery, she's coming to talk in conversation with Tasha Grantham. It's going to be an hour-long talk with a reception. And one of the things, I met Sonia for the second time last Monday as we were laying out the show. And as she talked about each of the pieces, it sort of unfolds. You know, when you first see the piece, it's beautiful to see. As you read about it a little bit, you can see more. But as she talks about it, it unfolds more and more. Her own personal history, her family history, our country's history, and then you as well, where you fit into that. And so I'm really excited to hear this illuminating talk on next week. We're going to try to record it and podcast it, so if you can't you can hear it later.
Please do that. So if you want to attend, which I imagine so many people do, are there tickets that they have to get? I mean, how?
No, because it's free. Everything's free.
It's you.
6:30. We're in the CCA building, which is where Live Arts is, right there on 2nd Street across from the Water Street Garage. Just come on by at 6:30, or maybe come a little early to make sure you get a chair to sit, because I think it's going to be a pretty popular event.
If I weren't going to be on stage Friday night, I would definitely be. So please record
it. Well, now I have to record it.
Now so you have to record to. It, because that sounds absolutely amazing, because my mom and I did her family's lineage a few years ago in preparation for a family reunion and discovered that my great-great-grandfather was 100% Irish, like off the boat Irish.
All right, so we're probably cousins.
Probably. All the way back to like 1790 something, yeah. And this we found a woman that we think came from England. And when we looked at the records from England, she came to England from Ireland. I'm like, holy crap, that's so right. cool.
Yeah.
All of this connection. No, separation. Keep people apart.
I know, that's what you chant. I know.
Hey, man, I remember the 80s. I learned my lesson. At Meese, don't send the people at me again.
Yeah.
Warren, thank you so much for coming and seeing us.
Thanks a lot. I'd love to come back again. I really appreciate all the work you guys do to help promote all of the arts in Charlottesville. We have a great culture of creativity here that is special, and you guys really help keep that going. So thank you.
Aww. It's all about the art, baby. All right. And right now, 52 minutes past the hour, it's all about the one thing that gives you the ring-a-ding-ding. Leslie's weekly rant.
Oh, why thank you, Clinton. Kurt Vonnegut said, "Go into the arts. You will get an enormous reward. You will have created something." Thanks for that, Kurt. But he also said, "The arts are not a way to make a living." Well, tell me something I don't know. There's a lot to being an artist. It's hard. For those of you that may not understand, let me try and explain it to you. Growing up, you know that there's something very different about you. Inevitably, the day comes when you have to tell your family that you're not going to be a lawyer or a doctor. You have to crush their dreams of you having money, because at this point, they know something you don't. That being an artist almost always means you will never be truly financially self-sufficient with your art. If you're lucky, you're in a family that doesn't shun or ridicule you for it. If you're very lucky, you have a parent or older family member that wants to nourish it. And if you're even luckier, your family has or can find the money to support your habit. If you were like me, a black child in the Bible Belt, you got your first taste of being on stage in church. You sang in the choir, you played in the Christmas play, you were part of the drama ministry. And then you watch something like the Academy Awards or the Tonys on TV, and you want with all your soul to do that. Because as kids, that's all we see, right? We see the movies, or if we're lucky, we go to a live show, and we see these people that seem just like us doing what we want to do. And they seem to be doing fine, so we can't understand why our family seems so worried about this thing we love so much. Then comes the end of high school. We've been in every play. We've done every chorus concert. We've played in marching band. We took drama classes. We went on theater trips to conferences with kids just like us. We've done it all. And now we have to, for the first time, face how we will be able to make money with this thing we love to do. And there we stop. From that moment on, we stop enjoying it just a bit. From then on, we are equally or even greatly concerned with being paid for our work than doing it. If you're a visual artist or sculptor, you have to have a studio space of some sort, which costs money. If you're a writer, a playwright, or poet, you have to have time to write and money to shop your finished piece around. If you're a musician, you have to have a practice space, which costs money. So everything becomes in service of getting money to pay for the thing. Let's say you're lucky. You have a marketable skill that gives you a 9-to-5 that pays for the space, the manuscripts, the film, the paint, the sheet music. Then your problem is making sure you find the time to write, play, paint, work with the clay, to take the picture. Then you start doing it for love, not the money. You play a gig for free. You donate a piece to a charity auction. You do some community theater. You're rejuvenated. You're reborn. You remember why you loved it so much in the first place. And then people start asking you to donate the piece instead of paying for it. People ask you for a print of that picture as a gift. People ask you to be in a show without pay. And pretty soon, something you valued so highly as a child and in your early 20s once again has no market value because someone else is selling it or selling tickets to it. You just don't get any of that money. Now you're bitter and resentful. You spent your time away from family, from work, from the rest of your life to do something that feeds you. Is it wrong that you want it to sustain you in another way? Should it be something that you simply give to the world without expecting anything in return except the applause? Well, let me answer that for you. No, you shouldn't. If you're spending 15 weeks rehearsing a play, months learning a song, weeks taking that perfect picture, painting or sculpting the perfect vision, you should get paid for it. You should know that you get paid for it. You shouldn't be greedy. You shouldn't be a diva about it. But there are needs to be some acknowledgement of your talent. If they're selling tickets, then your work is worth something, and you should be getting something for it. Never sell yourself short. Never settle for less than. Your art is a part of you. And although it may seem odd to sell at first, the more you value it, the more others will too. That old adage still holds up today. You get what you pay for. And as I circle back to my buddy Kurt, he says, the arts are a very human way of making life more bearable. Practicing an art, no matter how well or badly, is a way to make your soul grow. I say you should be able to grow your soul and your wallet, even if they don't grow at the same rate. And that's the weekly rant.
Really?
You have a problem with this, Clinton? Really?
Really?
What? What?
Really? You took all that time and all that verbosity. You could have just said, it's all about the Benjamins.
Oh my God. It's deeper than that. It's not all about them.
You could have come straight as Gangsta Leslie.
You're about to meet Shaniqua in a minute.
She wants more money.
Yeah.
Less problems. That's what she wants.
Okay.
That's what she wants. So let everybody get your dollars out.
That's right.
They get your dollars.
That's right.
Dollar bills.
Because you know what?
Dollar bills, y'all.
As the commercial says, I'm worth it. What you got now?
Disgust.
What you got now?
Disgust. Such shameless
disgust?
Trash.
You got disgust. But, excuse me?
No.
He's done? He's
I'm
leaving.
Out here. I'm out here.
He's leaving.
I don't think I could afford to be in the same room with
Well,
you.
You never could afford to be in the same room with me. What's different? Oh, my goodness. He loves slamming that door, people. We may have to actually get a new door if he slams it harder next time. I don't know. I think there may have. Yeah, the knob is now wiggly. He's breaking things. Okay. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed the show today. We had a lovely time talking to Elva Mason and Warren Craighead. If you can, please go see Sonia Clark's Bitter, Sweet, and Tender and next Friday. Check out the conversation with her because, God, I wish I could be there. And don't forget to take some time, talk to your representatives. Be sure this DOJ ruling gets fixed, people, okay? You guys have a great week, and we will see you next week. Bye.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.